Alrighty then. Alright, so that's going. I like that. Seems like my computer's been kind of silent as far as that weird fan noise as of late.
Jinx, motherfucker.
Yeah, I know, I just jinxed it. Watch. Anyway. I don't think it happened during the last podcast either. I'm not sure. I don't remember it.
I think maybe just for a little bit, but not much at all.
Yeah. I'm sure just by sitting at it for at the computer for a while, it'll start to happen again, just to be annoying. Anyway, all right, so it's recording. We're at the 45-second mark, so in 15 seconds I'll start. My cat will probably meow in the background. All right, gotta go.
Yep.
Welcome to the Serial TV Killer, Serious TV Drama Podcast with Scott and Dan. I'm Scott, and with me once again, the Kemper to my Ford, it's Dan.
Good evening, Scott. Dan, Serial Killer here somehow I managed to watch some TV so we can talk about shows again, somehow.
It's two in a row. It's our longest streak since, I don't know, end of last year. I can't remember.
Well, after the way the baseball playoffs went for us, fuck you for the first half of that. I guess we need to have some kind of, good things happening.
I don't know what baseball is. I don't know what you're talking about. Anyway, I love how people have asked me questions or did I read this article or whatever. And I said, dude, once Altuve crossed the plate Saturday night, I turned off the TV and I haven't wanted to watch or read any baseball coverage since then. Whatever.
Yeah, once I knew the Twins were playing the Yankees in the playoffs, the season was over for me as well.
Yes, I know we tend to, I wouldn't necessarily say we beat up on you guys, but we keep winning.
It's like me swearing on the Serious TV Drama Podcast. It's just inevitable. There's only one way it's going to happen. Sooner or later, it's going to happen.
Oh, speaking of which, I can't believe the coincidence of this. As anyone who uses, I guess, if they have both an iPhone and a Mac computer, they have this functionality as well. When I get texts from anyone who also uses an iPhone, it pops up on my computer screen. And I kid you not, I am not lying. Just now, during this little conversation about baseball, my bartender friend just texted me that Verlander is losing 8-2 or something. So Nationals are actually going to take the first two games against the Astros, which he said that should put a smile on your face. Because one side he said, like, oh, I'm totally going to root for the Nationals because, great, don't let any quote-unquote super team win then. The Nationals are a better story. Let them win. And if they go into Houston and actually take the first two games, booyah, amazing.
Yeah.
So it's just funny that literally just popped up on my screen. I gotta tell him, like, I can't believe the coincidence of that. I mean, something funny like that happened yesterday, but
that Ford and Tench would both be rooting for the Nationals, being based in Washington D.C. area.
Oh, look at you getting it back on track. We didn't even have our banter about my ridiculous injury this week.
Oh, yes, yeah, we should. I do kind of want to know about that. So since we do have a tradition of podcats creating meowing, hissing, or various other dramas, I'd kind of like to know how that situation ended up.
Well, I'm one who tends to, let's be nice and say I tend to roughhouse a lot with my cat, the cat known as Dude that some people are aware of from social media, whatever. Perhaps, I go a little bit too far. I tend to be very loving and sweet to everyone else's cats, and I tend to mistreat my own to a certain extent. Don't worry, you guys don't got to call the Humane Society on me or anything, but although every once in a while maybe you should. Well, anyway, the other morning, I guess it was, today is Wednesday? So it was Monday, it was early Monday morning, and I don't know why I was getting into a thing with Dude early Monday morning. He kind of went slash happy on my hand, and I don't mind the tiger stripe like slashes on the side of my hand, but one of his claws sunk really deep into the meat of the palm on my left hand. And throughout the day, I could feel it just kind of, it puffed up a bit. It was really, really sore. And and even right now, you can kind of feel heat coming out of it. Whereas if you touch any other part of my either hand, it's fairly cool. To the point where I couldn't put pressure on the palm of my left hand, like everything. And you'd be surprised how many times you do that without realizing it, no matter what you're doing.
Oh.
Because and then things like washing your hands or whatever become kind of I mean. Luckily, it was not my right hand, which would cause problems in many other areas. And I don't mean that one, but yes, it would cause a problem in that area too. It was bad enough I had to go to the doctor. And basically, I'm on antibiotics and I had to get a goddamn tetanus shot. Probably the first time I got one of those since I was a child. And and it's funny because I made it kind of a pleasure. Okay, this is cat karma. I deserve this. This is what I get. This should teach me I should not be treating dude this way, especially when you kind of realize dude's like somewhere in the 18 to 19 year old range, But he should have been renamed Cagney or Bogey at some point because he's the most stubborn little motherfucker ever, as far as cats are concerned. But it's funny because I've been trying not to do that. But it's amazing how many times during the course of a day I instinctively would go to smack him for something. And then I realized, oh, wow, I really am a bad person. Look how many times I've had to stop myself. It's been like 7 or 8 times in the last 24 hours. Anyway, this isn't going to win me many fans with animal lovers out there. I'm sorry. I'm great to everyone else's. But, I love my dude, but, he pisses me off. Especially since he likes to, every once in a while, take a crap on my new Shining rug based on The Shining. And I don't know if he's trying to send me a message. He even did it late last night when I had a guest over and we were eating food really late at night watching something. And he was annoying us. So I just said, okay, I can't hit him. I just picked him up. I put him in the other room. He was staring at us through the French doors. And then about 5, 10 minutes later, I take a look and I see him. He's sitting kind of funny. I went, oh, don't tell me. And I ran out there and he had deposited a little ball of fun on the rug, and I was like, and I can't even, oh, I can't do anything. This sucks. All right, I'm not sure how to get, I don't know how to segue from that to Mindhunter, so let's just.
Well, I guess I can tell you how I actually ended up watching a TV show for once, which I've been really slacking on this year. But I what happened was I went to Oregon on a flight the earlier in October, and I was flying Delta, so Delta usually has video screens and the thing in front of you so you can watch a movie or whatever on the way. And normally, since it's me, I watch an old movie, but the list of classic movies was pretty slim, and I didn't want to watch Gone with the Wind because it's longer than the flight, and I didn't want to watch Breakfast at Tiffany's just because, I just didn't want to. I haven't seen it, but I just didn't want to watch that on a flight. So I ended up watching Zodiac, of all movies, even though I own it and have seen it before. And unsurprisingly, that kind of set me up in the mood for Mindhunter, since it's, that. It's just like Mindhunter, the birth of Mindhunter, basically.
Pretty much. I mean, and David Fincher's behind both, so yeah, clearly.
So even though Mindhunter doesn't have Iron Man, the Hulk, and Mysterio in it, it's still.
That's right. I never thought of that. Don't let Marty Scorsese hear you say that.
I was just yesterday on the same topic. I was reading an article about all the different actors that played bad guys on the Batman TV series, the Adam West one. And I'm just like, you know what? There is a precedent for all these really good actors being in these Marvel movies. There just is, because I mean, it's the list of great directors and actors on playing bad guys in the Batman TV series. So yeah, I think it's okay if Otto Preminger can be in a fucking Batman TV show, I think it's okay for Robert Redford to show up in a fucking Marvel movie. So,
Yeah. Hey, go. I won't. I don't even go back that far. I'll just go back to Superman the movie. If you can have Gene Hackman and Marlon Brando in your superhero movie, yeah, I pretty much think everybody's fair game. It's like, hey Marty, why don't you ask your boy Bobby about what the hell he was doing in, the Adventures of Rocky and Bullwinkle, and get back to me. Anyway. So obviously Zodiac led you to get in the mood to watch Mindhunter season two. And as some folks might recall, we did our podcast about season one of Mindhunter. I think that was back like in the very beginning of January of 2018. Oh, by the way, that was like episode, I think it was episode 195 of the Serious TV Drama Podcast. Feel free to look that one up. That's one of the few that I really would go out of my way to recommend. I think we really did a bang up job on that one. Hopefully we are able to match it tonight.
We're on a roll there. We're definitely,
Oh
that
yeah.
and the Dark one
We were
too.
yeah, we did a bunch in a row. We were covering Netflix series. We were on fire. It was like Black Mirror, Dark. I think we eventually did the Western one, which I'm forgetting the title of it right now off the top of my head.
Godless.
Godless, right. But the other thing that kind of made me feel a little bit better about when we did the Mindhunter season one podcast is we actually did that one roughly, I think, 3 months and change after it was released, or 2.5 months at least, because I think it came out in October of 2017, and we didn't get to it till January 2018. So the fact that Mindhunter came out a few months ago, a couple months ago, in mid-August, no big deal. We're right on track for a
Yeah.
change, so it's
Yeah,
fine.
there's plenty of stuff for people to watch, so I mean,
Yeah,
yeah.
it's funny. I think it's become an almost repetitive and even boring complaint that people have, but
Yeah.
honestly, it has gotten. It's funny to say something better is also worse. It has gotten worse year after year because there's too many things. And especially now that if you're someone like most people, we have a few different streaming services now, and then you find out about all these other things that are on Amazon, that are on Hulu, and then Netflix is a never-ending list of things, and not to mention, oh gosh, what do I got in my DVR I haven't gotten to? It's just,
No, it's
there's only so much time in the day. There's a lot of great things that I know I haven't gotten to, things that I was looking forward to that I haven't gotten to just because, number one, of time. And then I think we're both guilty of this. We know full well when we do have some free time, there are things that we either A, should be watching, or B, oh, I've been meaning to get to that because you want to watch it. But for some reason, we decide to watch something which is like anyone else would go, really? I mean, with you, sometimes I know it might be like you might be rewatching
Yeah, TNG.
a Star Trek series or an X-Files thing or Twin Peaks or whatever. I know you do that from time to time. For me, like this past like a few days ago, and again, I've been doing a pretty decent job when I get a chance of knocking off a series here and a series there, and I've been keeping track of it on our Facebook page, whatever. And for some reason, I can't say why, because I don't nothing inspired me to do it. I decided to go and watch season five of Marvel's Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. on Netflix, of all things. But I was, but you know, I was laid up, I was home, and I was like, okay, and I because season six is in my DVR, and I see it's like 12 episodes, I think, or something. So for some reason, all I remember when season five was on TV, when it aired on ABC, that it didn't start to like mid-December or something like that. So I naturally assumed it was also like a 12 or 13 episode run. So I was getting really kind of like satisfied with myself when I got to like episode 11. I was like, oh, I probably have one or two more to go. And for some reason, I had to go to more episodes for something. Then all of a sudden, I looked and I was like, wait, there's 22 episodes. There's an. But the story's finished. And I was like, oh wait, there's gonna be another story arc. Oh god damn it! But now I'm stuck. So I think I left off at episode like 17 or 18. I don't know. I'll get back to it. Anyway, once again, wow, we're going off on tangents. Mindhunter, but Mindhunter, I actually watched. I think I actually watched it within a week of its release, something like that. Whereas you, on the other hand, you just recently watched it. Which means we might be relying a bit more on Daniel-san's memory for this season than mine. But just to give folks a heads up on how we're going to kind of proceed, obviously we're going to talk about the season, our thoughts, opinions, and so on. And later on the podcast, we'll get into some more historical perspective and speculating on the future of Mindhunter, which is sort of kind of what I think we did in our first podcast. And
Yeah, we
so,
definitely. I remember you talking about the Atlanta child murders, and I mean, you just, I mean, yeah,
oh
we
yeah.
did, yeah.
So, like I said, I don't know. We may be talking about the season in broad strokes. Who knows? We'll just see what happens. So, the only thing I'll start off by saying, and then I will then cede the floor to you for however long you wish to grab that spotlight. One major thing, other than the way this was obviously the bulk of the season was focused on the Atlanta child murders, was also how the focus of the show itself kind of shifted a bit. And it'll be interesting to talk about that. I'm kind of interested in hearing your opinions on that. Because with season one, it felt that very much that the Holden Ford character was very much the focal point. I mean, to a large extent, he's would be considered the quote unquote main character on the show. And he certainly felt like that on the first season, whereas Tench and as well as Dr. Carr were felt more like supporting players. This season, I felt the focus kind of shifted more to those two, where we spent a
Yeah.
lot more time with them, not just on cases, but outside of that, than we did with Ford. So it was kind
Yeah,
of interesting to see
absolutely.
that, and we can discuss how successful or not that was. And now it's Dan.
That's definitely a good entry point to talk about. But I mean, there's definitely a clear contrast between seasons. I mean, season one, I mean, it was pretty much Ford's personal, Holden's, I can't call him Ford, Holden's personal life. But so unfortunately we lost his girlfriend after last season because he was a douchebag in the last year. But they're definitely the focus towards Tench's personal life, and then I guess, I mean, Olivia Dunham's personal life this season. I mean, it's well,
Olivia Dunham.
well, it's good to kind of flesh out the characters a little bit in different ways instead of just, I mean, it just makes it, more balanced show, whether or not you love or hate what's going on behind the scenes or think it's necessary or not. I still think it's good that they at least make the effort to, kind of give the characters their due by, filling in just their personal shit.
Right. It's interesting because all three of these characters are all, I'll do like air quotes, that you can't see. They're all loosely based on actual people. Like Holden Ford, he's based on Agent John Douglas, and Bill Tench is based on Agent Robert Ressler, and Dr. Carr, Wendy Carr, she's actually based on Dr. Anne Wolbert Burgess, whatever. And it's funny, the way they've had to color in these three characters are all actually storylines and aspects that were either clearly or not so clearly not the case with the three actual people. So that's the more truly fictionalized part of them. Like John Douglas did not experience the panic attack slash mental issues, certainly not to the extent that Holden Ford does. Wrestler did not have an issue with his kid, which we'll talk about. I won't say anything more about that. I'm dying to hear what you talk about that, quite frankly. And Dr. Burgess, well, among other things, not gay. So those are like the ways they kind of filled in and colored in those characters to make them more. Again, they're fictionalized. They're not using the actual name, so that's fine. But it's kind of interesting to note that. Each of the three, the major thing about them that we see outside of their work is something that they are is totally made up for the TV show.
Yes. Well, I suppose we can talk about Dr. Carr's like side story first. I mean, I guess it was fine. I don't know if it really. I mean, I think maybe like, I think it's more interesting when they're focusing on the fact that like she keeps getting sidelined because I think that's a lot more interesting. And I suppose they use that to like, I think they gave this relationship thing more precedence than that, and I don't know if that was necessarily the best choice. I mean, it was fine. I mean, the actress playing her girlfriend, whatever, did fine, and so on. But I guess it wasn't, it wasn't something just like that was annoying, but I
No.
wouldn't say it's the most compelling thing I've ever seen.
Well, I thought that because I remembered back in season one that they touched on a little bit of her personal life before she decides to pretty much relocate to work with the FBI, and I guess kind of delving back into that again is just kind of to remind us that her character is not just she's not just a worker bee. You know, they're showing that there are other things going on with her. Did it take up more screen time than necessary? I don't know. I could see a case being made either way. I felt it worked well enough because both she and the other Anna Torv and whoever the other actress was, I do not recall the name of the actress playing the love interest or whatever or girlfriend or whatever. The scenes were well done. They were well crafted. You know, there were certain moments there. I think it's more about when you're watching a series of, you know, like Mindhunter, that's not the first thing that comes to your mind as far as the actual personal relationships of the show. But it's also, I think it's their way of trying to keep this from being a almost serialized procedural. You know, where, yeah. You know, like the days of like the old days of like Law and Order, where, you know, for a good 15, 20 years, you never knew anything about any of the detectives' personal lives. I think that might have changed over the years because it's been on for like, you know, 100 years now or something. That's for you now, I guess. But that's what I think they were doing here. I wholeheartedly agree that the more interesting stuff with her was her dealing with the issues at work. Because really being, you know, a sign of the times, and it's also a very relevant issue nowadays as well. So it's one of those kind of like little mini zeitgeist kind of things. Like, oh, that's really important, you know, in this day and age, and in the Me Too age, and so on and so forth. You know, especially that scene at the party with that major player dude, whatever his name was.
Yeah. And yeah, that guy was a real douche.
Oh yeah.
One thing that's interesting too is that, like, while I empathize with her character for, you know, getting sidelined and you know, director, observer character, like, you know, just kind of want her to stay there and do that. But I kind of, even though he was definitely like, you know, smoothly handling her, I also kind of thought that like he was right in a way. I mean, like, you know, maybe she doesn't belong in the field, and her, you know, I mean, while she kind of wants to go do the thing, it also, his perspective did make sense to me in a way too. I mean, it didn't seem like he was full of crap or just like keeping her there because she was a woman. It just kind of seemed like, you know, he thought that she was better suited to the research stuff, and that the, you know, their clumsy attempts to do the same job that Holden and Tench were doing, you know,
right. There's a big difference. Well, she's an academic, and you don't, in generally speaking, you're, especially if you're, you know, an agency like, you know, like the FBI or CIA or NSA or whatever, they're not sending academics out in the field, you know, where there could be even, number one, any kind of remote risk to them. Granted, she's in a setting where there would be guards and whatever, but still, it's one thing to talk about something in theoretical terms and, you know, whatever, as opposed to encountering them head to head. I mean, I know that she was teaching at the college, and she does have, you know, she's a doctor. I don't know if she is an actual, you know, either a psychiatrist or psychologist. I don't recall what her doctorate is in. I don't know if it's specifically behavioral sciences. I think it's something different than that. So there is a risk in putting someone out there like that. So I do agree that that his decisions were not necessarily based on her gender, but I think everything else she was dealing with outside of that clearly was. And
So while I felt bad that she wasn't able to go do it, I did think it was interesting that they didn't, like, you know, I mean, I didn't feel like he was exactly, you know, like being the bad guy. It seemed like a less cliche situation than you would expect somebody to do, especially in 2019, you know, when shows are more woke or whatever. I mean, they try to be, you could definitely see, you know, there must be, you know, 50 other shows that would have been a lot more ham-handed with that situation and made it really seem like it was something. And this just felt a little bit more, I don't know, organic, I guess.
Well, it basically, not everything is going to be black and white. This is one of those more grayer areas, and you know, that's kind of where it slid in there, I think.
Yeah.
So, well, That was the development of the Dr. Kara character. What about the stuff with Tench? That's
It's definitely. I got the impression as I was watching it that it was probably a storyline that would probably piss some people off for some. Just like I could see people being sick of it and just not being into it. I haven't paid attention to what people have said about it. I just got the impression that it was like one of those kind of things that people would be complaining about. I myself really wasn't bothered by it. I thought one thing they did is they show a little bit more restraint than I would have expected. I mean, like they didn't do like, well, like I said, they didn't do the cliche things. They didn't have like a scene where like, Tench has crime scene photos, like, and then they find him like in his kid's bed or something like that. Like they didn't do like the really obvious things that we've seen done a zillion fucking times. So that in itself kind of made the whole thing a little bit more just, I mean, just it didn't feel, just cheap and fake drama just for the purpose of doing whatever. I mean, they mentioned some of the like, the satanic stuff that was starting to creep around in reality back then, but they didn't go over the top with that either. So like while you're so kind of like, I guess it just I could, like I said, I could see people not liking it, but it kind of defied the expectations for how that kind of storyline normally goes on a show like this, which I appreciated.
I remember at the time when I watched it, and I think I had read somewhere around that same time after I'd watched it, that they kind of took some the details of the case with that the kids involved in loosely mirror something that had happened back then. Unfortunately, I did do a shit ton of research for this podcast, and we'll get into all that much later. I forgot about that until you're mentioning it now. I guess my feeling on it was, there were things I liked about it. I liked it giving the actor, what's his name, Holt McCallany? McClaney? Holt McCallany. Yeah, he's the guy who plays Bill Tench. I liked them giving him something more to play with because he's very good on the show. He's very solid. But it's nice seeing him have to deal with other situations, family situations, a wife who's becoming understandably becoming increasingly tense and shrill and so on. But and though the moments where they're, especially as the series goes on, aren't especially fun or pleasant, at least I understand why she's being that way, even if it's kind of becomes a bit excruciating to watch at a certain point.
Because
I'm
neither one of them is a bad guy, it's just like with
right.
the new director and
Right.
we're just like neither one of them are exactly bad guys, even if one of them's doing something that isn't, working out for the lead. Exactly.
Right. But at the same time, while I was definitely interested in the storyline, which is basically about, well, 'cause long story short, the storyline is about, hey, it looks like your kid has the makings of, a future serial killer. It's Dexter Jr. over there. I can't help but can admit that there was part of me that says there was a certain convenience to this contrivance.
Yeah,
That,
it's a
oh.
little, yeah, it's almost too on the nose. And then, like,
Exactly.
just, it's not quite, but it's just like,
But it's really close.
because they didn't, but yeah, they really tiptoed up to the line there. But if, like, they did, like, like I said, the cliched things, it would have really been lame, but they got about as close as they get to it, before it just, just became not good. So, I mean,
Well, right.
it's a little.
I kind of like the idea that they actually, at least, it's kind of following what you were saying, that they didn't write poor drama in the way like, oh, it's because of the influence of him and his work and, seeing these pictures and whatever. It's like, no, there's mention of, certain references he might make when he's home, but he doesn't really say anything to any great extent there, from what I recall seeing. So it's just, might be just a bad seed. But I didn't hate it, but I wouldn't say I loved it either. It was kind of like, I think I kind of felt in the same ballpark with both the character development situations for both of them. I might have been a bit more intrigued by the Tench one, only because there was a certain level of tension or conflict there that wasn't just based on whether two people stay together or not. I was kind of curious how far they would go with it. But beyond that, I was like, okay. I gave them something more to do. They're very good actors, but I kind of want to get back to focusing on the other things in the show that make it such a compelling watch for me.
Yeah, totally. So, I mean, it was good giving giving the actor, he definitely pulls off like weary really well. So the ability that the fact that the plot let him be so wore out most of the season, just I mean, it just it's something he can pull off really well. So I like that, and it created some tension here and there. But it's definitely the B story, and not, I mean, just it, they managed to just barely do it without making it annoying, I guess.
They toe the line, but I think they were able to do it fairly well. I mean, as a result, does it take a little bit away from the season compared to season one? Maybe a little bit,
Maybe
because
an A
be
minus with an
well,
A.
I think also it's, I don't want to say it's an unfair comparison because that, of course, it's fair to compare two seasons of a show to each other. But season one benefits from it's the introduction of these characters and we're building them. And so the storyline, say for for Dr. Carr is, meeting her for the first time, being able to convince her to come work with them and how she's able to even work with them at all, that's a whole storyline unto itself. When you get to season two, well, that's all kind of done. She's already part of the thing. Now, okay, we got to give her something more. And that sense we get her, stuff with her relationship outside the office, her going on interviews her on her own, her dealing with the Observer, the new director. Only if you don't watch Fringe, you're not going to get references like that, but don't worry about it. Fringe is pretty good.
Did to watch Fringe now, I'm not gonna lie.
Watch Fringe up to a point, then make up your mind. I would
Yeah.
say.
I still like most of it.
Okay, I'm not going to sidetrack us because that'll add another hour to this podcast. But I loved it until Nimoy died. Anyway, just like Star Trek. Anyway, so let's get back to the actual season. Now, with the focus shifting to the two of them, when it comes to Ford's character is really just, he's basically coming back from having had his hospitalization, panic attack, etc., that we saw at the end of season one. So there is a there, and of course there's a certain, it's interesting because again this is like roughly 1970 or 1980, it's taking place in 1980. So there's far more of a stigma at that time of perception of him and what happened, as opposed to if it was like 30 years later, where it's something that's just, it's much more discussed, it's much more commonplace for people to talk about things like panic attacks, like post-traumatic stress disorder, all those kind of things. But then it was kind of like, ooh, you don't talk about that. It's kind of, you look like you're weak or you're a coward or something like that.
Yeah.
So he kind of low, I thought he kind of low-keyed it a little bit at first, but he certainly gets back into the swing of things as the season progresses. So for I'm trying to remember. So we don't really get to the Atlanta child murders until what? Mid, is it more like midway through the season or a little less than midway through the season?
I think it starts creeping in, maybe like a maybe you know maybe 4 episodes in or so, and then just like it takes a while to get down there, I think,
Right.
like the first whatever the first time that Holden goes down to
Yeah, he
Atlanta.
goes to Atlanta for the first time. That's, I think, when he encounters those people, and then he heads back, and then they all go back later on, right? So much like season one, until you get that major forward progression of plot as far as what the quote unquote big case is, the show is focusing on what their jobs are supposed to be, which is going to interview, these convicts, these actual, quote unquote serial killers, and interviewing them, getting information just to help them, compile, profile, etc. That's what season one was about, and they certainly do that in season two. I would say I was thrilled that we did get to see Kemper again. which is kind of a weird thing to say, I know, when you think about it. But that Ed, the Edmund Kemper, character, the from season one, was such a major and strong part of that season. I remember thinking when we were getting through the first few episodes of this season, it's like, oh, I wonder if this season's kind of be missing that, not having that, almost that sage serial killer that they go to, that Lecter-esque kind of situation. But I think they still were able to make that work really well for the show based on the array of people they met and how all those interviews went, because they certainly the success and failure of them certainly veered back and forth depending who they were talking to and who was doing the interviewing.
Right, yeah, I definitely, well, it wasn't quite as compelling. I mean, yeah, I guess it was just different. I mean, we didn't get to see an actor that we really like do all that stuff as much, but I think they did a mostly decent job of, so it didn't really feel like we were missing out as much as we could have been missing out on
Right.
a lot of a good actor like that.
Are you getting text during the podcast again?
Am I getting what?
Are you getting text during the podcast again? Okay,
No, sir.
I thought I heard that. I'm a text. I thought I heard that last podcast too. Anyway,
Oh.
well, they kind of they kind of go for a big time early on in the season when one of the first interviews they have is with David Berkowitz. He's better known as the Son of Sam, and most people, I think most people have heard of the Son of Sam killer. I mean, heck, Spike Lee did a movie that kind of was loosely about it, the Summer of Sam and stuff.
He's one of my personal heroes.
Yes, the running joke persisting of Dan, or is it a joke? I'd say a running gag, but then he might bind and gag people, I'm not sure.
I'm more of a cat person than a dog person,
There you
to be
go.
honest with
But
Yeah, sorry.
I figure as we go through these, I'll fill in any of the blanks as far as the killers are concerned, because I didn't spend all these hours researching and not to do that. Really quickly, for Son of Sam, that was the guy who he kind of call, he was kind of took that alias himself. He came up with that in letters that he wrote to a Daily News columnist at the time, Jimmy Breslin. Before that, the newspapers were calling him the 44 caliber killer. His MO back in 76 and 77, he was targeting young women. He would typically walk up to a parked car where like a couple was on a date or whatever, and he'd fire at the occupants. So he killed six people, he wounded seven others. His eventual story was that he was killing to provide blood for his father. Again, remember he's saying he's the son of Sam. Sam turning out to be his neighbor's dog that Berkowitz insisted was possessed by some ancient devil that commanded him to kill. So one of the fun things about the scene with Berkowitz is, just as in real life, he kind of walked that back. He kind of said, "Yeah, I'm kind of full of shit." I thought they did a pretty nice job with the prosthetics for this actor. I did not look up who played David Berkowitz. I apologize, but if you were to look at him and do a side by side, pretty well done. I mean, the only reason I was so aware that there were prosthetics is because I just knew they were, But beyond that, I think as they do throughout the whole season, I know we're going to be talking about that. They really do a pretty nice job of casting when it
Ooh.
comes to these actual people,
Yeah, I just
actual
looked.
killers especially.
Yeah. I'm looking at a picture of him now, and yeah, they did a really good job for him.
Now, other than one other biggie who I know we're going to spend a lot of at least a sizable few minutes talking about, what I found interesting is a lot of the other killers that they interviewed weren't necessarily that well known to people, or they didn't really delve into it enough on the show so that we would know who they were. For example, when Ford and I think it's was it Agent was it Barney? Was his last name Barney, the
Yes.
African American dude from yeah.
Yeah,
Who
I
oh
thought it.
I
I
really
thought it
liked
was
him too.
Barney, and then yeah, I thought it was Varney, and then I was looking up the cast, and I saw it was Barney.
Barney. Like not to be confused with Barney Fife, hopefully. So they go to meet a couple killers who are all these, again, these are all actual, based on actual killers. They don't make up any for, at least this season, I didn't see them make up any. The first one they went to go meet was that guy, William Pierce Jr., which was one of the, definitely an entertaining interview because he's the epitome of the guy who insists that he's smart, but he's clearly not the sharpest knife in the drawer. So he's actually a total moron. He killed, I think, a minimum of like 9 people back in the early 70s. His interview goes nowhere. So I think that's kind of, you start seeing Ford's frustration. Ford, I find it interesting this season, Ford does not do much with the interviews.
No.
You know?
He's definitely taken more of a back seat to Tench, who's got like gotten really, really smooth at extracting the information that they want.
Right. The other person I should mention that I met in Georgia, and who's kind of significant, because I think it's the first time they meet a serial killer who's a person of color, actually. They meet William Henry Hance, who had killed 3 women in Georgia, and he's another one of these guys who would write letters, except he wrote directly to the police. And he was talking about like the forces of evil and other bizarre convolutions. He was some weird attempt to try to cover up his crimes, but actually those letters are what led to his capture. So another genius.
Yeah. amateurs, amateurs, let me tell you.
So then we also had, because remember when we were talking about Dr. Carr and how she went to interview people, this popped up on a lot of people's radar just because of the actor, and I know this, I'm sure this thrilled you to no death when you, if you heard about it. When Dr. Carr goes out to interview some people, and she takes, I think, the cowardly agent with her, Agent Smith,
Yeah.
they spent a lot of time talking to this kid, Elmer Henley, and apparently there were a number of viewers who recognized the actor because he played a young Ned Stark in those visions that Bran had back in season 6 of Game of Thrones. And I was like, oh, who cares? His case is kind of interesting because he was a teenager who ended up essentially being like a serial killer assistant. And the killer he was helping, his name was Dean Corll, was actually known as the Candyman, which reminds me of a story I forgot to tell you about the cat claw incident. I should derail the podcast again to tell you about it. I'll do it really quick. But Candyman, he murdered several teenage boys in Houston in the early 70s, apparently over 2 dozen kids. And Henley was convicted of helping him procure and murder at least 6 of them. Although the only murder that Henley says he committed himself was killing Carl, the Candyman. Okay, let me tell you the Candyman thing really quick. So I'm actually on a, as of this winter, fall rather, I'm actually on a dart team for the first time, right? So I'm on my text, I'm involved in this, like, 8-person chat all the time, whenever I'm trying to ignore it, I guess. And they found out about the cat claw, cat scratch issue, which inspired a number of jokes, whatever. No big deal, whatever. And they were wondering if I was going to come out to play darts last night, because even though we weren't playing league this week, we were going to have like a practice night and do different things. And I said, I don't know if I will, because I'm on a tetanus shot and I'm on antibiotics. I really can't drink, so I don't know. I'll see if I feel like it. I did go out much later that evening and I went over there. Apparently, everyone in the bar had been betting, speculating, and even betting whether or not I would show up. And they had constructed a playlist of music all night that were mostly songs based on cats. So, everything from the Stray Cats to Cat People and whatever. And specifically, the most obvious one of all was Cat Scratch Fever. Apparently, the moment I appeared outside the bar, before I walked in, because I've fallen back to the throes of tobacco again, I don't know if I was spotted or not. And when I walked in, it was right when the third time Cat Scratch Fever was playing. The entire bar was in hysterics, and then they kept saying, "It's like Beetlejuice or Candyman. We play the song 3 times, and you showed up." And I was like, oh, that's funny. That's really funny. Like, and they keep asking me what I want my nickname on the shirt to be. And now I'm afraid they're going to do something like Candyman or Cat Scratch Fever, and I don't want that. Anyway, good story, Scott. Anyway.
I like that. It makes me happy, to be honest with you, but that's because I'm an asshole.
So and if in case you're wondering, I apologize that I'm monopolizing the podcast at this point. And there's a reason why I'm doing this. The reason why I'm profiling all these killers that they talk to, because the next one is fascinating, and we wouldn't have known any of this from watching the TV series. The next person that Dr. Carr goes to meet, it's a guy named Paul Bateson. He's a guy who was convicted of just one murder, and he was suspected in the death of at least six others in New York City. Supposedly, someone was like dismembering corpses, bagging the body parts, and then tossing them into the Hudson River. The dude denied he ever did this. You remember the second guy they go to interview? Because he was a guy who obviously had gone to like gay S&M bars and all that kind of stuff, but was kind of.
Yes.
Listen to this. I don't know if you knew about this. That guy, for a living, he actually used to work as a radiology tech. As a result of that, because maybe he was seen somewhere doing it, whatever, he ended up having a brief cameo in the movie The Exorcist. When the child Regan is getting like an angiogram, he's the guy there helping to do it. The director of that movie, William Friedkin, remembered Bateson after he had gotten convicted. He went to go visit him in Rikers. Friedkin actually now claim that, well, not now, then claimed that Bateson confessed to another murder to him, but the guy never admitted to anyone else, and so there was no proof, etc. Friedkin within the next couple of years, then goes on to co-write, because it was based on loosely based on a book, and direct the movie Cruising, which is actually somewhat based on the murders Bateson was suspected but never convicted of. So basically, that guy was basically the foundation for the murderer from the movie Cruising that came out a few years later. I just love the fact he's in The Exorcist. That just blows
Yeah.
my
Yeah.
mind. So let's get back to the series, and basically, once you get past the interviews, it's really about the Atlanta child murders and what happens in Atlanta. So I'll start to shut up again and let you talk about it. I thought there's a lot of really good stuff that was happening in a lot of these scenes, especially with Ford and the people in Atlanta. I think that's some of my favorite stuff in the season, quite frankly.
You want to talk about Manson before we switch to that? That's the last like non-relevant interview.
Saving. Oh, you know what? We could do Manson, because then I got to. Oh, because I didn't mention Tex Watson either, obviously. Manson. Okay, let's talk about Manson. The one thing I'll say, it's kind of, as probably everybody knows, it's kind of funny that the actor playing him, what's his name? Damon Harriman? Harriman? Harriman?
Yeah, Dewey Crow, yes.
Dewey Crow from Justified, for those people who watch Justified. The
Or that guy
weird.
that yells Tucker on Breaking Bad.
Wow. Interesting. Just interesting coincidence. He also, this summer, appeared as Manson briefly in the movie Once Upon a Time in Hollywood. So, talk about getting typecast.
Yeah. How do you think he did?
I don't know if there's anyone who's watched season two, unless it's going to turn out to be you, who would disagree that possibly the high point of the season was the Manson interview.
Yeah, it took me a little while to get into it, but I think it was just because Manson's such a like a lunatic, so it kind of felt like it was hard because it felt like he was acting, but like it's fucking Manson, so it's like hard to like rate the actor's performance based on that. So yeah, I mean, it just took a little while for me to warm up to it, but it definitely was just a it ended up being super compelling, I'd say. I wouldn't say his performance is was quite as good as like have you seen like the 70s TV movie with the dude that played Dwayne Barry on X-Files playing Manson? Have you seen any of that?
Yes, I have.
Yeah, he's and yeah, Steve Railsback. He was just like a really really good fucking Manson. But I mean, that guy's good at playing like super fucking intense like creepy fucking shit. But I still thought this was really good as well.
I've watched Gosh, I feel like I've watched a number of Manson clips and interviews over the years. I'm sure my best friend has because she's really into serial killers and especially Manson, whatever.
Nice.
So, what you were saying about his performance seeming like a performance—that's Manson.
Yeah.
That's pure. That is pure man. That in fact, that is one of the things that struck me almost from the very start. It's like, oh, he's got it. Because the thing is, Manson was always putting on a performance, you know. And the more the scene goes on, the more I was just sucked into it. Because Manson, when you'd watch him in extended interviews or you read about him, you realize he's someone who would veer from sounding like, well, just basically the most insane motherfucker in the entire universe. And then you realize he's not stupid. You know, he's very calculating. He's very all the time. That was just, I remember there was a big interview that she had with, like, I think it was on like ABC back in like the 80s or something. Everyone was talking about it back then. Shows you how old I am. I thought the fact that he just got the mannerisms, the physicality was what really struck me. The way he was carried his body. And between the fact that the actor kind of, you know, just with a little bit of hair, this kind of almost naturally looks like him. And then, you know, you add in whatever amount of prosthetic work they did. It was, to me, it was eerie. It was damn eerie how much he came off as Manson to me. And as far as the show itself, what made this whole thing fascinating, and I love the flip of it, is this is the thing that Ford wanted all along. He wanted the Manson interview. That's the big thing to him. And who ends up taking over and monopolizing that fucking interview? It's Tench. It's totally Tench. So yeah, I for me that was that's the moment I think everyone was no, I was like, oh, wait till you see episode 5. That's a good one. Yeah, I'm glad we talked about it. Which also is what leads to Ford goes to see Tex Watson, who is one of the Manson family members, who was one of the main participants in the Sharon Tate murders and so on. You know, he's one of those finding one of those guys who found Jesus and so on and so forth in prison, as far as I recall.
Yeah.
Okay, now we can go to Atlanta. Thank you for I can't believe I just skipped over Manson like that. Okay.
Yes,
Yes,
Atlanta.
Atlanta. That's why we took a big pause there, just like to gather our bearings there.
I was gonna. You wanted me to insert audio of the Atlanta Braves tomahawk chop clearly
No,
there.
no,
I'm not
no,
sure.
no, no, we're not gonna do that. You know, if you want to put a little Ray Charles Georgia on my mind so that way we get banned in some more countries on YouTube, go ahead. But
I'll save that for a Quantum Leap podcast, but for
there you
now, I'll
go.
just keep doing that. Yeah. So, what would you like to discuss about this case? I definitely, I mean, when it started, I mean, I think they did a good job setting it up. It's like it, you know, it just seemed like he was going on a date, and then like they made it look like he thought, and of course he thought he was going on a date because he was all getting ready and stuff like that. So I thought it was super interesting when you like all of a sudden you realize, oh, that's not going on at all.
Oh no, that's not a date. That's a setup to meet these women whose each of their one of their kids has been, you know, taken away, abducted, and God knows what's happened. It's funny that I remember before season 2 premiered, someone on Facebook. I know who it was. I won't say them by name. I don't know if they can't remember if they listened. They probably don't listen to the podcast anyway. Tucker made some comment about one of his issues with season 1 was that there really was practically no people of color on the show and whatever. And beyond me pointing out, well, keep in mind it's supposed to be historically accurate, so they're just. In this specific department, in you know, in the FBI in 76, 77, 78, there may not have been that many African Americans to begin with. And then I said, but by the way, if what I know of season 2 is true, don't worry, you'll get more than your share of African American actors on the show. And we certainly did, between Agent Barney and then, you know, everyone else. But the parents, especially that one main woman, the leader of that little group, I thought their performances were really strong because they felt very authentic to me. It reminded me kind of like, and this has nothing to do with the color of their skin, I swear to God, but it reminded me of when you would see actors that you hadn't encountered before, like on a show like The Wire, and they just seemed really just believable because you totally believe, you think they're a mother first as opposed to an actor. And that's kind of the way I felt about these actresses who appeared in season. Not so much the girl from the hotel, but everyone else. She was fine, but you know.
Definitely not as strong as a lot of the other casting was, but yeah, I totally agree. They did a really good job with setting up those various characters and slowly building up the case. And I mean, they managed to do a good job. I mean, of course, it's child murder; it should feel serious, but they did a really good job of kind of like, I mean, building up the gravitas. I mean, like, and making it seem really, really serious as they did that. Because I mean, it just and the fact that I mean, Holden definitely handle the situation well instead of being some like punk fool like whining that he wasn't gonna get laid or something. He just like I mean he cares more about doing this kind of work than he does about this. So
It was kind of interesting to see them kind of working with the police, and because a lot of times in season one, oftentimes they were kind of their assistance was kind of welcomed, and here it was up to a certain point, but you could tell there were a lot of politics at play here, and which was kind of tying their hands at times and so on, but it just reminded us about just the whole mundane nature of what they were trying to do, how they were going to catch the actual killer here, which a lot of it was just like night after night after night of surveillance on specific bridges because they assumed someone was going to be dumping a body and so on. And you had sent me an image earlier today. Once we do get to Wayne Williams, again, amazing casting. Guy's a dead ringer. He's a dead ringer for him.
Yeah, I just when I looked up to see what David Berkowitz looked like, I sent you a screenshot like 10 minutes ago of what the BTK killer looked like older and what Edmund Kemper looked like. I'm just like, they're really good at fucking casting this
Oh
show.
yeah,
So,
they're spot on. I mean, unlike some
but I
shows we
mean,
watch, but this show really does a good job with it.
the casting for Wayne Williams is just, I mean, and the makeup I suppose too, but just awesome. And I looked up the actor that plays Williams, and I mean he's been in like nothing. I mean I think his his IMDb filmography was like 7 episodes of TV shows and like one movie that nobody's ever heard of, and that's it. So he definitely, for this being like I guess his first main thing, I mean he brings a lot of, I mean, just super poised in that role. And I mean, it's not a particularly easy role to play either, because I mean, there's all sorts of shit going on there. So, I mean, just they're really good at casting people. And this guy, for being an unknown, I mean, rock solid. I mean, just everything about this, just great. Except what he did in real life, of course. But,
Although, I mean, it's interesting, they went and they gave us something of a postscript after he was, after he was arrested on the show. I, having watched the show 2 months ago, I don't recall all the details of the postscript. I do know they mentioned the fact that they definitely mentioned the fact I think he was only really convicted of two murders. I think it was the final two bodies they found, who, if memory serves, and it's not, I don't, it's not ironic, but it's interesting that the two murders he was convicted of, neither one of them are kids. What it was like 21 and a 27-year-old. But they essentially, decided within, I think, sometime like the following year that at least 20 something of the other cases, I think they just felt, oh, he probably did them, but they weren't going to convict him of them, so he never got charged with them, but they closed the cases anyway. So you can imagine the feelings of the friends and family and just the people of Atlanta in general, especially people in those neighborhoods who never really, I think in their minds, ever really got justice or even got
No.
closure of any kind for the disappearance and murder of their children, because to be honest, there still remains a question as to whether or not he actually did those murders. There's never been any proof that he did, for sure.
Right.
I mean, I think even this, I think this past year, the Atlanta Police, the Georgia Bureau of Investigation, and so on, I think they're actually re-examining both old and new evidence about those cases. I mean, I haven't heard any revelations as of yet, but they're still looking into them. They're still not, you know, they've reopened a lot of them at this point, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, I think that's kind of like there's a wave now of like, older cases getting reopened, and then, and after like, the first season of the Serial podcast was popular, and the true crime podcast became more popular. I mean, they've done stuff about, the Atlanta child murders. There was a podcast for that and for all this stuff. So I suppose now they're just working on stuff just so they can, because I'm, because I mean, just all these different various police cases, the way that they were handled or deliberately not handled, have came to light. So I suppose now these various departments are, doing damage control, even though, I mean, 30 years later, I'm not sure exactly what the if it's something they actually need to do or not, but it definitely seems like they're working on the variety of these kind of cases a
Oh, yeah,
lot.
it's totally fair because, you know, again, he may very well have been responsible for all those murders, of course. I mean, that's been obviously been the presiding presumption all this time. But there had always been talk, rumors, etc., that, you know, a lot of the murders had were by other people's hands. You know, even back then, there was even talk of it being Klan related or not. No one knows if there was any. At the time, number one, you didn't have the capabilities that you do nowadays. There was no, you didn't have DNA testing and then things of that nature. And number two, a lot of people just wanted this to go away, to be honest. You
Right.
know, and whether they pro the only and it's only because the it became a national story that I think the cases got as much attention as by the authorities that they did. Because I think, from what I understand, things have been going on for some time, and people actually they even talk. It even happens on the show. They when that's what the mothers are talking about, how they've been kind of been largely ignored. You know, it's just been like missing
Yeah.
treated like just missing persons reports and stuff like that. So.
Yeah, and the more they dig into the case, the more the various agents found that just like nobody bothered investigating any of this shit at all.
Right. Exactly.
Yeah, just since I just watched Mindhunter, and I it, the postscript thing it's pretty much the same thing that which I also just watched Zodiac did too, where like at the end of the movie when it goes to black, it just gives you a little information about the various legal stuff that happened after the fact, and cast a little bit of judgment on what happened. So both things, definitely the same format for this is that.
Yes, right.
Unsurprised.
Yeah, that does make a lot of sense. Especially when you're dealing with,
Yeah.
especially at that time, I think when Zodiac came out, because haven't they kind of sort of kind of think they know who did it at this point, or they actually have focused on who actually the Zodiac murder was in
Yeah.
recent years, but not when that movie
Yeah.
came out though.
Yeah, I mean, when the movie came out, they had some information, but it's, but a lot of it's like circumstantial, like just with like Wayne Williams. Once Wayne Williams got, incarcerated, the killing stopped. With the Zodiac Killer, when, Arthur Lee Allen died, all the killing stopped after that. So like, like they think they know, and it fits the whatever,
Right, right.
but a lot of just like, the absence of murders because of the lead suspects being dead or incarcerated. So that's it's circumstantial, unfortunately, but the kind of thing where they generally think they know.
Right. So I mean, as a whole, and I know there's one thing we haven't gotten to yet, but I know we're leaving that to we're putting that aside for a moment. So once you get to, you know, the conclusion of that case and whatever, you know, it essentially kind of, you know, kind of like wraps up the season for the most part. I enjoyed the season overall. I thought it was very good. I probably like season one maybe a touch better, you know, a little bit better. But that's not saying this wasn't a really great season. I think season one just, you know, blew my socks off, and this, I think my
Yeah.
socks stayed on, but my shoelaces got loosened at least. So.
Yeah. I think, yeah, I would say I probably similar. I think the Atlanta child murders case, the way they handled it and the way the tension built and built towards the end, I thought that was really effective.
Yes.
Especially, in the second half of the season, of course, when it was going on. But it was so strong where I was watching it. I mean, it definitely was I mean, I really didn't give much of a crap about the side stuff going on at that point, just because they were doing such a good job with the main story.
I probably, if if season one's an A, I'd probably say this is like a B plus or something like that, or something in that area. Maybe A minus, I don't know. Nah, B plus. So the one aspect of the season we didn't get into, which is what's going to lead us to the, our final segment of conversation here. In season one, we got these little tastes, touches of scenes that we talked about back in January of 2018. Little hints about a guy who we know is actually going to be the BTK killer. BTK standing for bind, torture, kill. They are hitting that. It was interesting how they were hitting that a little heavier this season, but they were doing it more as was it, it was really more of openings than closings, if I recall. Correct? Was it?
Yeah, I can't remember how they did it in the first season. If it, I thought it was they did it as openings in the first season too, but I
They
could be
might have.
wrong.
They might have.
But
They probably did. They probably did.
they definitely seem to be doing BTK cold opens pretty much every almost every time this thing. I think at least 8 of the 9 episodes I think had BTK opens.
It's interesting because I'm trying to I'm trying to remember if right now at this stage at the BTK killer, I think what we're seeing, what we saw was kind of like his home life, and because I think he go because he's a weird one because he goes through these long, extensive periods where he doesn't kill anybody, and then he resumes again. So again, it's worth noting that this is the killer who doesn't get apprehended until 2005. This is, so right now we're in like the very early 80s. He starts popping up again, I think, like in the early 90s or something like that, or late 80s, whatever. So I'm kind of curious how they're going to eventually handle that. Again, I've not heard of this show. I know some shows get renewed for like multiple seasons. I have not heard that Mindhunter has. I'd feel a lot better about things if they had, because I think, I mean, in some way, or there's no reason you're doing this unless you're going to get to him. But I don't think they're going to. And yes, there. I'm sure there will be some form of a time jump for to the next season, but it's not going to be that big a time jump. It can't be. It simply can't be. So I'm kind of curious how they're going to. I still am speculating how they're going to possibly handle that.
Yeah, that's really interesting to consider. I mean, because I mean, just like that doesn't work with like the normal format of a show, but they've definitely set this up to be. I mean, it's definitely a very significant part of the show, and of course, I suppose they're going to be investigating it at some point, some future thing. But we know that they're not going to catch them until these guys, Tench is what it could be like 70 or something by then. I mean,
Well,
they're going to be.
it's also interesting because, again, I mean, obviously, since these aren't the actual agents, these are characters based on them, and so they have different names, so you can change what their personal histories are. Because, for example, the agent that Tench was based on, he pretty much retired, I think, in 1990. I think he still did some, helped out, did some work, a little bit after that. But by and large, he was no longer an agent as of after 1990. So that, but obviously they don't have to keep going with that. Although I wonder if you might get aged out also. I mean, I don't know. I don't know if they have field agents who would be, because again, where it's 1980, 81 now, so 25 years later, Tench is not a young man. He would definitely be at least in what, his late 60s or 70s by the time they would get to that. Maybe older than that. I don't. I'm curious how they're going to do that. There's a lot of things I can speculate with some certainty about the show, and I'm going to momentarily. That I'm very. I don't know. We know they're going to have to do. I mean, we've seen them have to do prosthetics for all the serial killers. They're going to have to prosthetic up those actors too, since they're going to be like 30 something years older.
We're gonna have to have, and I suppose we're gonna have to have some younger agents taking more of a role in the show as the timeline goes on. I mean, if they plan on following this BTK thing to its conclusion, so that should be pretty interesting. But there's no reason they can't have like these actors old, like they did in True
Oh
Detective
yeah.
season three.
Oh, I think they can. I
Recently,
absolutely think they can. Absolutely.
yeah,
Yeah. I don't want to
but
be younger. I don't want to be like, that X-Files revival where so those two idiot agents are, oh, awful,
Yeah,
awful. Sorry, I
but
didn't mean to touch.
the showrunners have given themselves a little bit of a challenge in doing it in that way, but I think it's I mean, there's no reason to suspect that they won't handle it really well. This is the kind of thing where it'll be really interesting for us to see on a technical level exactly what they do.
Yeah, I mean, again, it's one of those things where I feel like if I felt for certain, where this is after this two seasons, like if I knew for certain Mindhunter was going to get 5 seasons, I would say, okay, they'll get to this at season 5. You know, I can't see them I cannot see a conceivable way for them to do it, say, like next season. It's too much time. There's too many other things I think they're going to get into for next season and possibly the season 4 as well. But I could see it being a season 5 thing for sure. So if they're and a lot of shows do have that, you know, quote unquote 5-year plan. If this show has a 5-year plan, I think that's where they'll go with it. But again, who knows? Maybe they'll do it in season 4. Maybe they'll do a wacky time jump. I don't know. But I'm very curious how they're going to handle that. You're right. I always love when writers kind of put themselves in a box and you're wondering, all right, how do you get out of this? Whether it be a cliffhanger or a situation like this where, like, how are you going to handle that? So I'm very curious about it. However, I would like to, as I think I did back in our podcast in season 1, I'd like to bring up and talk about who I think is likely to appear in the future of this show, possibly the very next season. So I done did my research here. So I'm gonna hit you with a couple that I think are extremely likely, and then we'll go kind of like a descending order here. And being the expert in the field that you are, just from your own personal anecdotes. Well,
I'm curious as to whether or not they're going to, you know, do the obvious choices, you know, for murderous parts of the 80s, like the Reagan administration, or if they're going to focus on, you know, individual serial killers. I'm not sure.
Oh, that, I thought we were
gonna, I just wanted to get that a little bit there.
We were going to get political. Yeah, well, Florida's its own issue. Okay, so back on track. So the first guy who I will mark as being the most likely killer they're going to get into, most likely the very next season. His name is Robert Hansen. He's also known as the Butcher Baker. Jesus.
One from Alaska?
The one from Alaska.
Oh, that's awesome. I'm like one of the, first that kind of thing I remember watching on like whatever channel those things were on was about him. So like that's really like the only one I can like that's pretty cool. That's awesome.
Yeah.
I remember the poorly done thing I saw on it once, and that was pretty compelling.
See, for each of these kills, I'll kind of give their little resume. From 1971 to 83, he kidnapped, raped, tortured, and murdered at least, and I'm going to be saying the word at least a lot, at least 17 women in and around the Anchorage, Alaska area. He would even hunt them down through the forest with like a semi-automatic rifle and a knife. He was arrested and convicted in 1983, and he was only sentenced for 461 years. The next guy who I think is very likely, probably, you know, just a tad under him, but also very likely to be covered, possibly in the next season. It's more about the timeline of the show. They could push him to early season 4. Would be a guy named Larry Jean Bell. This guy doesn't have quite the number of kills that a Robert Hansen does, but he's a sick motherfucker. He abducted and killed 2 females in South Carolina, of the 17-year-old Sharon Faye Smith and a 9-year-old Deborah Mae Hemick. He was also strongly suspected in disappearances of 2 other women. But this is what this guy did. When he abducted the 17-year-old Sharon Smith, he kept calling her family for days, taunting them about her. Even though he obviously became clear when they caught him, he killed her probably within hours of abducting her. For some reason, he also called that family when he snatched the other kid, even though that wasn't their, from what I understand, it was not their daughter. He was actually caught in the early summer of 1985. It was a huge FBI manhunt there. His trial is actually really noteworthy because of his extremely bizarre behavior throughout the trial. He kept blurting out odd comments and shut, almost like he was pretending like he had Tourette's or something. He would ramble, he would ignore questions. He later revealed in interviews that he was trying to fake mental illness in hopes of getting a lighter sentence. No, he got the death penalty. Those two are the strongest possibilities. Mainly because both those killers are actually profiled in the original Mindhunter inside the FBI's Elite Serial Crime Unit book that a lot of what we've seen in these first two seasons is taken from. So that's why I put them as like, they're like the top two. They definitely got to do the Alaska guy. That's almost guaranteed. Now, there are a few others. Because the series shouldn't only be beholden to that book. Haha, Holden, get it? Anyway, bad pun. There's a few other really strong possibilities. I won't go in as much detail about them, but the first guy, his name is John Joubert or Joubert. He was also known as the Nebraska Boy Snatcher or the Woodford Slasher. He abducted, tortured, and murdered three boys in Maine and Nebraska in 82 and 83, and was caught in 84. Now, the agent that Tench is based on, Robert Ressler, he was actually involved in that case. So that, I think, is what makes it a really good possibility, especially considering the timeline. It kind of works because, it's now we're in the early to mid-80s. That kind of works here. There's a few others that Ressler worked on when I was digging into his stuff. There's one I can't believe the show decided not to do, maybe because they thought it was just too wacky. There was a killer named Richard Chase. He was also known as the Dracula Killer or the Vampire of Sacramento. He killed six people over the course of a month, drank their blood, and ate some of their remains. This all happened like in January of 78. He was caught like almost right after he committed his final murder. He died in his prison cell in December of 1980. So obviously they've already passed that, so they can't do him. But Tench was involved in meeting with him and trying to capture him. So that's why it's kind of odd that they didn't bother him. They probably just couldn't figure out a way to squeeze that one in with everything else they were doing. There, you mentioned about obvious people. Here's two I don't really probably need to get into details about them, but it's interesting to note that again the agent that Tench is based on, Ressler. He actually worked. He was very involved in the cases of both Ted Bundy and Jeffrey Dahmer. I'm thinking those two are famous enough. I don't really need to go into what they did. We all know Bundy killed like over 30 women and girls, and Dahmer. I think he dismembered. What was it like? 18, 17 boys or men and boys back in like from over the course of like a decade, or whatever. Dahmer is a problem because his story is more of a early 90s thing. So I don't know. That would be a much later season if they wanted to. I kind of think they might. Bundy, again, possible, but he didn't confess to any of his murders until just before he was about to be executed. So I don't know if they'd bother going there. They don't need to go to either Dahmer or Bundy, obviously. But it's interesting that Ressler was involved in both those cases. And finally, there are two of the most notorious serial killers of all time. They're up there with Bundy and Manson and Hill's version of Mount Rushmore or whatever you want to call it. I don't actually think either are going to appear, but I could see them doing like a single episode kind of deal with either one of them, kind of do that big build up to that big scene, just like they did with Manson in season two. The first one. It's such a gimme. I can't believe they won't, but maybe it's just because maybe neither Douglas, I haven't looked into it. I don't think either Douglas or Ressler, i.e. Ford or Tench, had anything to do with him. The killer clown, and I don't mean Pennywise or the Joker, John Wayne Gacy, because he was convicted of raping, torturing, murdering 33 kids in the 70s. He was sentenced to death in 1980, but he was on death row for 14 years. You gotta think they'd want to interview Gacy. That kind of he's just sitting there. The other one, which is extremely unlikely, but I love the thought of it because I love if they could get like some really much considerably older actor, and just to really make a nice, really creepy scene. Ed Gein. Ed Gein, who's known as the Butcher of Plainfield or the Plainfield Ghoul. If anyone out there, including you, Dan, well, Dan, you should know who he is, of all people,
Yeah.
of course. But for anyone out there who doesn't know who I'm talking about, this guy, he was the inspiration for the original story of Psycho. He's the inspiration for several other horror movies that Rob Zombie has done, the Texas Chainsaw Massacre, Buffalo Bill from Silence of the Lambs. A lot of that is taken from the Ed Gein story. I mean, again, I won't get into the whole thing, but we're talking about someone who, murdered, dismembered, used body parts all over his house for various things. He had a lampshade made out of skin. He had human mask faces, things. He had a belt made out of female nipples. It's insane. Now, he was actually he's a he's, he might be a neighbor, because he was confined to the Mendota Mental Health Institute in Wisconsin.
He's a Wisconsin boy, just like Dahmer. We got a good
That's right.
we got a good stable of people here. Yeah.
Now, he died of cancer in 1984, so he would be alive in the early 80s. The only thing is that he was, obviously, he's committed to a mental institution. I don't know if, I think all their interviews have all been to see people in prison. I don't think they've gone to a mental institution, and I don't know if they would. But that would be pretty cool.
Yeah, I suppose they'd have to be working on a case where it would make sense to talk to him. So if there's a early 80s case where somebody's behaving in a similar fashion where it makes sense for them to go talk to Gein, I suppose that would be the only way we would see him.
Yeah, very possible. It's just a matter of whether, because part of their story is supposed to be that they're compiling all these things. It's almost like creating a
Right.
database. Hence why all these other, like why they went to see Berkowitz or this one or that one. I mean, there's probably no true educational value to go meet with Manson, as I think even Tench was saying something along those lines early on in the season. But it was
Right.
kind of like, but Ford's kind of dream, I guess. So I kept
Yeah.
thinking, well, Gein and Gacy. I mean, Gacy, I
Right.
really would think they would do, but I think they seem to be real. Maybe they're touchy, but no, they're not. That's not true. I'm thinking of all the other kills they've talked to. No, the sexual aspect has actually played a kind of a significant part in all of them. So.
Right, and if and now that the unit like actually has like publicity and more clout. If the Observer was able to get the Manson before they, worked on the Atlanta child murders, I think that there's a reasonable chance that they'll be interviewing, some more celebrity killers.
The Observer. Oh boy, it's too funny. Yeah, so like I said, I'm pretty. I'm gonna say the I'm gonna say the Alaska one is definite. I would bet the house on that one. The second guy probably, and I find it hard to believe they won't eventually. It might not be in time for next season. It'll be odd if they don't touch on any of the cases that Ressler worked on. If they only focus on one agent's book and not touch the other agent's book, that seems strange to me. So we'll see how far the series goes.
I think it'd be cool if they got to go up to, go shoot somewhere that they that looks like Alaska. That'd be kind of nice too, I
Oh, I
think.
love the
Maybe if
Alaska
we could
idea. Absolutely. Yeah, just a
go.
different, a totally different kind of environment and locale.
It really works well for that kind of noirish thing, with the way the sun's at a different angle and all that. And there's been plenty of movies that are up there, in the Arctic Circle area that, are able to make good use of that kind of thing. So the potential for that to be pretty freaking for a good cinematographer to really make that shit look cool. It's very strong.
Right, absolutely. So that okay, I kind of blew my load there as far as all my predictions of the future. And your voice is cutting all far away and tinny. There you are. There, you're back.
Yeah, all this murder talk, made me blow my load, so I was a little busy. Sorry.
Oh Lord. Okay. Anyway, is there? I think that's kind of a wrap on Mindhunter, unless there's anything else you wanted to touch on.
Yeah, no, I think that pretty much covers it. It's just I appreciate the show. This kind of drama doesn't tend to lean on like the really big, really big crazy narrative devices to like make like just cheaper feeling drama, just like the show just feels more natural. I mean, there are a lot of scenes that just kind of feel like you're watching something that's trying to get you, get you all tense and stuff. It just kind of, I mean, like it's just a more natural tension. It feels less manufactured, I guess. That's the way I would.
Yeah, absolutely. I totally agree.
That kind of goes with Zodiac too. I mean, which is, I guess, a template for this. There's, that's a movie too. It's pretty matter of fact, and while there's a fair amount of, cool camera angles and stuff like that, for the most part, there aren't a lot of scenes that just feel like you're watching a scene from a movie. Like this one in Zodiac, that like where Mysterio goes and talks to some guy that has like a creepy theater, and he ends up getting kind of freaked out, and the guy is really creepy, and like the scenes, it's pretty tense. And it's like the only, like, one of the only scenes in that movie that really feels like you're watching, like, something designed to get you a little bit freaky. And then this is a show that, while they have plenty of subject matter that, is capable of doing that, they just don't tend to need to feel the need to do that. And I kind of admire their restraint with this kind of thing, where they just, aren't doing it the same way we've seen similar things done a zillion times.
Right, absolutely. I agree. Agree, agree, agree. Okay. So, if you, not you, Dan, people listening, you guys out there, if you enjoyed this podcast, and I hope you did, hope it was fun, hope it was informative, hope it was entertaining, at least one of those things might happen if you hang out on our Facebook page. Look us up on Facebook. It's the Series TV Drama Podcast page. Like the page. You can join the conversation about shows like Mindhunter, as well as many more. You can also find us on iTunes the very same way. Type in Series TV Drama Podcast, and you can subscribe to our feed as well as rate and review us there. You can also just pop Series TV Drama Podcast in Google and find us half a dozen other places. Trust me, we're everywhere. We're on YouTube. It's everywhere. Whatever. We're everywhere. We're even on Twitter, although not that often. But our handle there is at STVD Podcast. That's STVD as in Serious TV Drama. Podcast. There you go. And that is it for tonight. I don't know for sure when we will be recording again. There are some hypothetical podcasts that will be recorded in the near future.
I suppose if we both jump on Mr. Robot or something and find it interesting, maybe we talk about that and that it's almost done or something. I'm sure there might be, there's a few shows out
Well,
there that, I'll probably give Watchmen a shot.
we can. The way I see it, I think there's nothing wrong with maybe one time we might get together and just do like a random conversation podcast where we could each talk about a couple of shows we're watching. So nothing that we would go on at any great length, but just like, hey, what are we watching? I know I've kind of, I know, I believe I've semi-committed to Jamie that I will do a podcast with. I think it'll be a one-shot podcast, I'm pretty sure. I think it all comes out as one season, because it's Amazon, for the final season of The Man in the High Castle. I said I'd do it, so I'll do it. That might mean I'm on the hook for another season of Miss Maisel, but I actually enjoyed that one. And we will have to, in either and hopefully you'll be watching and participating or not. I'll force you to,
I
whatever.
will. I'll watch it. I'll watch it. At least that.
We will have to do, it might be two, it might be one in December, and it might be one in January. The whole the DC shows, the Crisis on Infinite Earths, it has to get done.
Yes.
It has to be done. I'm watching it now, and I mean it's the reason to bother watching Arrow for the final season, because every episode is about that, building up to it, of all shows. So I'm like, okay, the monitor keeps showing up here. I got to keep watching an Arrow. I'm dying to see what they're gonna do because of all the guest stars and many people who might appear for 5 seconds before they get vaporized out of existence, which actually is kind of funny. Hey, there's Linda Carter's Wonder Woman. She's gone, but I'm dying to see how they pull that whole thing off. And then Better Call Saul next year. So we'll see. And maybe at the end of the year we'll do a best of the last 2 years.
Oops. Yeah, we can have Traveler season two and
The Crown season two, season three.
All podcast failures are definitely they're my failures. I apologize.
Well,
I get sidetracked with shit a lot.
I might have been more responsible for us not getting around to doing season two of Dark because I just kind of delayed it. So I might take the hit for that one. Anyway, it just seemed like it would be a lot of work, and I'm lazy. Anyway, with all that said, wow, I can't believe we don't have that many listeners. It was fun getting together with you once again tonight, Dan. Love talking about a show that we have mutual love and admiration for. So you guys out there, hope you enjoyed the podcast. Hope you enjoyed Mindhunter, and look forward to talking to you guys again. Have a good night.
Good night, everybody.